Field tonight, 5 games Love for Coach
Radio.
Sexual abuse claims against former coach Paul Riley. A report accuses him of coercing players into having sex, which he denies. Yankee fans will have a long offseason to wonder what could have been if the Yankees had beaten the Red Sox in Boston Tuesday night in the AL wildcard game. New York lost to Boston 6-2. Fans who made it to Beantown for the game say it was not a lot of fun to be around so many gloating Red Sox supporters.
They don't like the Yankees in that.
They're very enthusiastic about that, which I honestly enjoy.
Yankee pitcher Gerrit Cole allowed 3 runs in 2 innings. Anthony Rizzo and Giancarlo Stanton hit home runs for New York, but it wasn't nearly enough. The Red Sox will now head to St. Petersburg to face the Tampa Bay Rays for the start of the division series Thursday night. Lisa Taylor, NBC News Radio.
If you're successful in life, you understand the concept of protecting yourself. Let me ask you this. Are you protecting your family and your assets with quality term life insurance? At the Term Lifeline, we specialize in policies of $500,000, $1 million, or more. So call us right now for a free, no-pressure quote. 800-509-1741. 800-509-1741. 800-509-1741.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Basile and Transformation Talk Radio.
Had enough of the been there, done that ideas? Tired of too much talk and so little action? Rewind now and welcome to Transformation and Change Radio with Dr. Kathy Obert, where the vision of true equity, inclusion, courage, and purpose meet powerfully. Dr. Kathy delivers us with dynamic, engaging conversation and the most authentically brave dialogue on air today. This hit show will challenge you to explore current issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion and deepen your capacity to choose courage to speak up to greater inclusion in everything you do. Fasten your seatbelt and accelerate your effectiveness to become a powerful change agent in your life, community, job, and society. Imagine true equity and inclusion and get the tools to really manifest your vision. No frills, no fluff, just really powerful, good stuff. Transformation and Change Radio starts now.
Welcome. I'm Dr. Kathy Obert, Center for Transformation Change, and I am particularly excited about my conversation with Alfred Ramirez this morning. Alfred, we met about 20 months ago around pandemic. I started holding these Friday morning community connections for folk, and it's evolved into folks doing anti-racism work, education, consulting. And whenever you show up, I just learn with you, and folks so respond to your comments. So what, about a month ago, I said, will you come join the show? And then you sent your bio. And I had no idea. I knew you were just someone I learned with and just full brilliance. President of Diverse Strategies Now. Had no idea you were in the President Clinton's White House, Associate Director for Presidential Personnel. And then you worked with the mayor, Henry Cisneros, San Antonio, Texas, who then I think was a secretary in President Clinton's, right?
Yes, over at HUD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you were an assistant director, special assistant with them. You also worked at universities and admissions. You were a director of a $2 million, I can't imagine, Mattel Foundation Initiative for Parents and Community, president of Greater Quad City Chamber of Commerce, Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. I could keep going. Director of Operations, United States Hispanic Leadership Institute, Kellogg Fellow, National Urban Fellow, Hispanic Business Magazines, 100 Influential. Listeners, breathe, because I could have read a whole nother. We are in for a treat today as you bring all of your brilliance and wisdom as we explore. And you, on your website, you're very clear about your mission to develop and strengthen leaders and organizations' communities. And what I really loved, I devote my life to work. I want my listeners to really, as we continue, get a sense of what is their life's work. You said creating access, opportunity, achieving equity, eliminating barriers. That's what we're about here at Transformation and Change Radio. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Wow. Well, thank you. That was very gracious of you to mention all of those things there, Kathy. I think really what I need to say, first of all, I'm learning to accept compliments or accolades because of what work has gone into that, but also the pain, sweat, and tears that are behind that. And even with all of that, the humility that we must constantly continue to have as we do this work, and be humbled by others who go unrecognized. So that's the sense with which I join you today in this room.
And particularly as a white person, reminding me to be humble is always useful for all my listeners. And that aligns with your vision of a safe, just, equitable world without barriers. We can be your true self, achieve your dreams, whether folks are acknowledged, recognized, get to lead very visibly or not, lead from where you are. This is what we're about here. And would you mind just helping the listeners know a bit about you? And because you did not just wake up one morning, as you said, a lot of hard work, sweat, tears, barriers. Just can you say a little bit about how you got to where you are, a little bit about your earlier life, how you're doing today?
Sure. I do want to say this, and this is even before I talk about respond to that question. You mentioned it that in sharing some of my quotes. We all should be looking at whether we're truly living our dream. Is it a dream deferred? Are we allowing others to defer our dream for us? To what degree can we control what we can control and continue to act on our dreams in small steps and then the occasional quantum steps? Right now, I'm really trying to balance and pace myself to remind myself, when is it a sprint and when is it a marathon? And the hardest thing for me is not to be a hypocrite. You know, physician, heal thyself. Am I taking care of myself in the fight, in the struggle? So in that spirit, I'm going to ask all you listeners, get a paper, pen, or your electronic instrument, because I want you to capture your aha moments, your revelations, your learning, your unlearning, and even your testimonies and confessions. At some point, capture that and know that this is a learning, sharing relationship today. So going back to your original question, so I was born and raised in East L.A., the oldest of five children. My dad was a barber for 50 years in East L.A., and my mom worked on and off while taking care of us. I grew up with the media and those outside of my area telling me the type of people that lived in East L.A., and it wasn't a very positive stereotype or generalization. I did grew up in a really tough section because the gang house was right on my corner. So every day they try to recruit me. I grew up with these kids since, age one. So it wasn't a hard recruit, but every day, when are you going to join us? When are you going to be one of us? And I was the oldest of five, so I knew if I did join that we would have four more gang folks after me and then maybe generations after that. So I walked to that line. Even going to school on the bus, I had to go through four different gang territories before I got to school. So one gang would get off, one gang would get on, a new one would get on, another would get off. So I walked that tightrope. I also grew up in the 60s, and I experienced I was living during Martin Luther King's assassination, Robert F. Kennedy's assassination, John F. Kennedy's. I was small, but still saw it live on the tube, the Watts riots, the Chicano moratorium. So I was impacted heavily by everything that I was experienced. And this is for the listeners here. I just didn't have the vocabulary to put it into words, to define it, to understand it. Fear that I felt and the constant barriers that I encountered, I did a lot of self-blaming, not understanding at the time that there were reasons for it beyond my control, the institutions and the systems that were in place. So that flavored what I've done over the years, and what drives me, what motivates me, the compassion and the empathy that I have before I call out somebody for being a troublemaker. You know what? Maybe it's good trouble. Maybe so.
I'm really struck by the similar life experience of walking that tightrope. That was your phrase. I know as I've learned with you over the last year and a half, You have a deep commitment to particularly supporting folks in minoritized identities, particularly folk of color. And you even alluded to one of the challenges of this work is thinking I did something wrong or what do I need to be? And I heard you talk really powerfully about the imposter syndrome and the inner critic, and it was just sitting there. So what if we go there now and we can go somewhere else where I had planned it? But what?
Sure. So I'm going to ask everyone, when you hear the term imposter syndrome, what do you think? And usually what it is, it's all those negative voices, you know, that the self-doubt, the ego behind the scenes that, you know, said that you were just lucky. It wasn't your skill or talent, your heart, your soul that caused that success. One criticism, you know, out of 10 you know, contributions that you've made, and you get crushed. The slightest flaw in your work, you know, having to be a perfectionist, you know, and also as you're succeeding, somehow thinking, am I fooling people? You know, when are they going to find out? When is the other shoe going to drop? And the other thing is, you know, and I'll talk about this, I guess, now. Why don't I bring it up? So it's different for different people, different backgrounds. You know, when the term imposter syndrome was created, it was two white women executives who looked at other executives and their sense of imposter syndrome. So it really didn't take into account you know, any systemic racism, classism, sexism, xenophobia, other biases, you know, racial trauma, racial fatigue, micro and macro aggressions, compassion fatigue. You didn't take into account all of those other pieces that would have someone doubt themselves. And so many folks who have encountered all those isms that I mentioned and those phobias that I've mentioned are busy blaming themselves and trying to work three times as hard just to feel that they've arrived, and also because they're asked to. So this also, and, you know, I didn't even mention how internalized racism, systemic racism comes into this, or internalized oppression, or internalized racism. Now, throwing out a lot of terms at a breakneck speed, but everyone here grabbed on one of those concepts, I'm sure, and heard themselves in there. But that's the whole mix. That is more than imposter syndrome. It's a person beat down and beat up, and then we begin to internalize it and do it to ourselves. Let me catch my breath for a minute.
I love it, and as a white woman lesbian, I relate to blaming myself. I just work harder, got another degree, and as you're sharing, I'm reminded that my healing came when I realized the systems of sexism, misogyny, patriarchy, homophobia, heterosexism, and was in some affinity space to do some healing work and also some empowerment thriving work. And if I translate this, because we do talk and center race here as well, breadth of differences, but particularly race, what I'm realizing is I think systems demand and require, not just ask, but tell me if you would disagree, people of color, indigenous folk, to actually lead, do the race work so we white folks can sit back and then if it goes bad, see, you were the problem. And so the exhaustion, the burnout, and then all that emotional labor and career risk, mm-hmm. while also juggling those messages, you're not enough, you'll never be enough, you're deficit.
Mm-hmm. Whew. Yes, yes, and yes. I agree with everything you've said. And so how typical is it? We take all the blame and someone else gets all the credit. And we use our car and we wear out the tires and the engine, and others will occasionally offer to give you a ride. So, yeah.
Great metaphor.
Yeah.
Because some listeners may be trying to think, how do we explain these concepts? So given all that's been going on, pandemic, up and down, new surge, and then maybe it's getting better, but deaths are still way high, time of racial reckoning, which I'm finding many leaders are really backstepping and saying, I didn't say that, and not, and then other issues of equity, inclusion. What gives you hope, and what are some of your concerns as you look at kind of this next phase of the work we need to be doing in organizational transformation change?
Mm-hmm. So what gives me hope actually, it comes from a sad place. We've experienced a tale of two cities, the best of times and the worst of times. We're experiencing that now. For all that's happened just within the last 2 years or so, pandemic, civil unrest, and murders online in real time via George Floyd and others before, during, and after. So we have that going on for us, the best of times, the worst of times. So what gives me, and so that correlates to what gives me hope and what gives me concern. The hope is that people are starting to self-educate themselves. And God bless people of color and allies and activist allies who are saying, go educate yourself. You do your homework, then we'll talk. You do your history, then we'll talk. I won't have to explain me to you, because also you're part of this mix and you're part of this history. You're not part of the blame, but at times you will be part of the privilege and all that comes with it. But let's do the work, because I've been doing it whether I wanted to or not. When I've asked to do the work, it's with, sometimes in a split moment. I'm not even planning for that conversation or that comment or that ouch moment. So the hope is that people are self-educating themselves around justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion work, JEDI work, and are becoming JEDI warriors, JEDI champions. That's the hope. And then they're becoming active allies and co-conspirators. The concern is that how temporary is this? Mm. How knee-jerk is this? How reactionary is this? How performative is this? Am I performing for the crowds, for the customer, for the client, for the employees as a whole? How authentic is it? How long-term is it? How sustainable is it? So that's where that concern comes in.
One thing, all of it, and one thing particularly, folks in marginalized identities really feeling I have to at any moment be ready and on guard, just not knowing what's going to come, not only to engage, interrupt a microaggression, but also even more hateful, intentional, deliberate, at a personal and career risk. So just breathe, because you're probably relating, and if you relate to that, being on guard here in Upper Ramirez might be truth-telling that you're now going in and just noticing, just keep breathing. So in your consulting and coaching, what are some of the strategies to address some of these concerns, to uplift the hope, to address what's coming in time, to not have the temporary performing checklist? What are some of the ways that you work with organizations and leaders?
Well, one of the things that I do around all of these issues, as well, and others beyond and above and below and on the same line, are I have a motto or a mantra, and it's the following, and it's in this order and not at all: listen, learn, lead. And that's how I live my life. Listen, ask questions, and listen, and actually hear, and stay quiet for a moment. Don't interject, don't interrupt, don't explain somebody to somebody. But that listen piece, what, and then learn from that, and then go deeper, go to other layers to that, and then lead with that, or know that you're not the leader now, and when to follow. So I'll stop there for a moment. But that's listen, learn, lead. I think it's key from the very beginning, as basic as that is.
I love it. And we're having some technical difficulties, so we're going to go to break early. But if you had trouble hearing Alfred, listen, learn, lead. And we'll start there maybe when we come back. We'll be back in about 3 or 5 minutes. This is Transformation and Change Radio. Dr. Kathy O'Bear, we'll see you on the other side.
Patricia McMahon, host of Divine Guidance with Patricia, and I'm here to help you live a more authentic, spiritually connected life. Join me every first and third Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Being who you are in everyday life is the key to unlocking soul wisdom within that a whole self already knows. Get ready to embrace your spiritual, mental, and emotional well-being, your whole being. Discover your gifts and strengthen your connection to spirit. We will explore earth guidance, divine truth and love, past life lessons, and so much more. So listen in to Divine Guidance with Patricia and join in your personal adventure to triggering, opening, validating, and being all that you are. For more information about me, visit divineguidance.earth.
Champion your life with me, Leanne Champion. First Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com. That new gym membership might help you get fit, but what about emotional fitness? Jump into the rushing waters of personal growth. Don't waste another minute feeling unfulfilled. Visit championyourlife.com and let's do this together.
It's time to get your life back on Burn Bright Today with Jennifer Marcinelli. Tune in each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Learn to move from the darkness of burning out to the light of burning bright. Jennifer is redefining stress and the energetic causes of burnout, shining a light on process to get your life back. For more information about Jennifer and her work, visit BurnBrightToday.com.
Tune in to The Truth Is Funny with Colette Steffen each Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show will have you thinking outside the box and riding the wave of infinite potential. Join Colette on the Higher Self Network, inspiring listeners to shine their brilliance and ensure success while roaring with laughter as they recognize the humor of the giant cosmic joke. Visit TheTruthIsFunny.com.
Join Jennifer Noelle Taylor on the hit show Quantum Touch Radio, supercharging your life on TransformationTalkRadio.com. You'll take a quantum journey as well as reveal powerful yet simple steps to create more abundance, better health, emotional and mental vibrancy, and happier relationships using universal quantum touch principles. For more information, visit QuantumTouch.com.
Healing has a ripple effect. One person's healing affects everyone around them. This is where the power of sharing our stories can be so important. Tune in to Playing on the Edge Radio with Megan Edge each month on Transformation Talk Radio as Megan provides you with ways of sustaining radical and powerful changes in your life. Enact the power of radical change. To find out more about Megan Edge, visit her website at meganedge.ca.
Welcome back to Center and Transformation Change Radio. I'm Dr. Kathy O'Bare. So delighted to be back with the president of Diverse Strategies Now, Alfred Ramirez. We're going to just keep talking about how do you do transformative equity, justice, racial justice change inside your organization. And first, could you just let people know how to find you? Because we've got the technical difficulties here. How can people find you if they want to follow up or ask you questions?
Sure. My website is diversestrategiesnow.com, diversestrategiesnow.com, all one word. And then you can look for me on LinkedIn. Those two places, I think, would be best to reach me. If work comes to worst, contact Kathy. She can get a hold of me, too.
Definitely.
Work on her. Let it come to me. Don't give her more work. She's doing so much. So it's diversestrategiesnow.com and LinkedIn.
Well, in your humor, Alfred, is the truth, I think, inside organizations. I find people in their privileged identities, particularly white, again, I'm at group level, not all, often, as I said before break, will sit back and expect folks of color, indigenous folks, to do the work or whatever the corresponding marginalized identity is. And so looking for ways to have folks in leadership who often have more privileged identities do their part. So let's use that as a lead-in. We were just starting to talk about what are ways you work with leaders, you coach folks, strategies to help folks increase awareness, commitment to want to do significant, sustainable change.
Yeah, but boy, there's a lot of there's a lot there. So bottom line is move away from statements to action. Please move away from statements and get into action. How many employees and employee resource groups pushed back right after this summer when organizations were putting out their statements about injustice and racism and they hadn't done anything up until that point, and then it died down, and employees rightfully so reacted. You know, this is all talk. So move from statements to action, and move from value statements to actually valuing others. And also, if you observe your mission, and is it really including all equitably? And the key word here is equitably, not equally. It's like the Phillips team does different diagrams where different people are standing on a box trying to look over a fence. How about, lunch is $10. We're all going to team lunch, but you only have $5 in your pocket, but equally you're going to pay. Well, equitably you can't. So do move from your observe your mission statement and how you're truly authentically acting on it. And that's the other thing too, be authentic. Be who you are or admit who you're not and who you want to be, who you aspire to be. There's no shame in or blame in saying we're not there, we admit it, and this is where we want to be. What is that vision? And also, whose vision? Who's doing the talking? Who's doing the walking? You were talking about people doing the work. Who really is involved? And also, don't make it a mandate. You can say, yes, we will all do this. But what's the this? What's the why? What's the buy-in? What's the understanding? And also, there's so many people that have a zero-sum mentality. If you gain, I will lose. If you're in, I'm out. If you're promoted, I won't be. Well, how about let the best person, the most capable person, move and move up? So I think just from the very beginning, that mindset and that authenticity needs to be in place.
As I hear you, I'm reminded how much time it takes, at least as my experience. Early on in my consulting, I would jump to action, training, coaching, let's move, and I didn't prepare the soil. Leadership case, vision, get people buy-in, leaders looking at their competencies, rate themselves, develop their capacity so they could lead. And the challenge I'm finding, I love your thoughts on this, is while we're preparing the soil and getting leaders so they're not just jumping to activity, but meaningful change that brings outcomes, not just action, equitable outcomes, closing the gap in exit interviews, closing the gap in retention, who we're hiring. So I'm finding that younger employees, particularly with one or more marginalized identities, tend to have more activist energy and want change faster than organizations do, even if they have effective consulting and coaching and movement. Are you seeing that? Do you have strategies? I'm listening.
Yeah. And I would say I'm always, whenever we talk about, generations, I'm always cautious because there may be an oops and an ouch there for someone listening saying, hey, I'm for my age, I'm old school. Or for my age, I'm new and modern and with it. So I think a few things. We have to look I was thinking about this earlier. We have to look at things as an ecosystem. And that's really where I'm going to be going with my work lately. As I'm evolving some thoughts and considerations, I'm looking at everything as an ecosystem, the interrelatedness of everything, the interconnections, and the interdependence. What better lessons did we have for that? By witnessing and experiencing the pandemic and the civil unrest that has occurred. that interdependency, where people may look down upon who are actually their saviors, who was in the supermarkets when everyone else was told to stay home, who was in the field in the fields being sprayed on when everyone was told to stay home, who was in the meatpacking plants with no safety measures, forced to go back while we were being sustained. So we're in an ecosystem. And I think for anyone who's impatient, be patient with the process, but act with a sense of urgency. And also know that if we're in an ecosystem, that my wants, my needs, my expectations, my vision is part of a whole. And if I get ahead, who have I left behind in the process? So I think that's kind of a good way to frame things and to frame our work around.
Be patient with the process and act with a sense of thoughtful urgency. You also mentioned something earlier, kind of collectively discuss the vision. Collectively talk about the business case, leadership case, the gap between where we want to be, where we are, strategies to move forward. And I think that's a huge pitfall for many leaders who get a sense of urgency when it's not useful and just we have to do this now because employees are upset or the shareholders are angry, as opposed to collective, collaborative. And I don't know about you, but I grew up in this U.S. system believing individual, you work hard, you make it, care for others, but it was from a paternalistic, I need to help you. So I think that aligns with all you're saying is we have to bust that up. It's not about pull yourself by your bootstraps, but collectively, how can we all move forward together?
Right, right. How about that for a myth, anybody can achieve great things if they just pull themselves up by their bootstraps. Yes, but when I do that, you add another floor to the building, and I have to climb another set of stairs. And then when I do that, you add another wing to the building. And when you do that, you start to hold your meetings in the basement. So yes, we can pull ourselves up by the bootstraps if we all have the same road. The other thing that you're mentioning, I'm going to use a case in point. I'm working with a group right now that contacted me a year ago, not this past August, last August, the August before. They wanted to embark on diversity, equity, inclusion work. It's actually called it equity, diversity, and inclusion, knowing that equity was key. You can be diverse, but how equitable and inclusive are you? And they put it on hold. They contacted me again in this summer and asked, can we start now? They're in the performing arts space. So you can imagine everything that got shut down with the work and even their own sustainability. Would they be around tomorrow? They're being very pragmatic. One of the first things they did was put into their bylaws equity, diversity, and inclusion language into their bylaws. So they've codified it, they've institutionalized it, even before they knew what the what was. They had a sense of the why, but still we're working to spell it out. We're looking at focus groups, internal assessment, and surveys just to start, to get a baseline. Where are we? Where are we not? And this is an important thing, is there a willingness to do this work? Are people really willing to do it? And let's find that out. And to what degree does that pushback exist? And you constantly in our conversations and in our group settings have talked about the pushback that occurs in this work. So they're very pragmatically and systematically creating this landscape to then get us to a plan. And all along the way, we have a task force that's inclusive and diverse. And even that's just the surface. We don't know what their intersectionality is even below their appearance or how they show up for all the other things that they represent in their fabric and in their character. So that's how pragmatic we need to be in doing this work. Pragmatic, systemic, and institutionalized in the work and develop metrics so that we can measure how we've moved the dial and where's growth and also where are the gaps. It sounds like strict strategic planning, but there's so much more involved here. So many more oops and outs moments, fears, and pushback.
And I'm reminded again, if you can have the whole organization involved in these processes, they may learn to trust and maybe begin to believe that the leaders are serious as they watch very clear action and movement, and their voices are considered and used, and they're able to learn about microaggressions and engage and get some of that internal capacity building.
Mm-hmm.
You said resistance. We were on a call recently where someone shared something like, person of color said they got a very clear performance feedback, negative, you're taking this personally. And I wondered if you would start there, because you said something in the chat really powerful. And since then, I've heard three other folk of color say they're getting white supervisors are critiquing them and trying to put them back into the performative box, tone policing, saying you're taking this personally, you're not being professional. Resistance, advice, what do you do?
Mm-hmm. So first of all, do take it personally, because they are making it personal. So in that sense, yeah, yes, I'm taking it personally. Wouldn't you if you were being, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, if all of this were happening to you? I think so. Several things. One is you can tell when you're being pushed out or pushed down, held back, or restrained, or even shut out. Are you part of that email string anymore? Are you invited to those meetings or not? In a meeting, are you given 5 minutes to talk about 15 minutes worth of work? Are you tabled? Are you interrupted? Is someone stealing your idea? All those things that happen just in that team setting. So there's that piece. When your livelihood is on the line and your life's work and advocation, or vocation, I should say, is on the line, it is personal. So immediately debrief with folks. Confide in someone that you trust. Develop allies. It's very important to have mentors and sponsors, sometimes above your supervisor's line of command, in this instance, and to really think about how they can help leverage you in the work. The other thing is put it back on them. These are the deliverables. These are the tasks. This is what we are challenged to do and tasked to do, not I. You know, there's no I in team, we. And this is where we're falling short. So at the end of the day, it's not about whether or not I have failed, whether or not we have failed as a team, whether you have failed as a supervisor, director, or manager. So how can you help me help you? And this work is so important, as we've heard from the top at the highest levels. How can we show you faith, your face, and act with grace as we do this work? And also rehearse. You know, I found myself in some very difficult situations where I had to literally rehearse what I was going to say and also time it. I had rehearsed dialogue for when the moment was right, what I called choreographed outrage.
That is so good.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, the cost to folks in minoritized identities, particularly folk of color, indigenous folks, to supervisor, folks even higher up, or even peer whites, to speak up, speak out, unapologetically raise issues, huge career impacting risk compared to if a white accomplice says the exact same thing. Actually, we get rewarded and seen as a leader. So choreographed
outrage,
thank you. And that is a strategy, a survival thriving strategy for folks in marginalized identity. So it might be a cumulative impact. Already the organization is toxic, so how do you work to survive if not thrive?
And Kathy, as you replay things back and then add to the discourse, I do want to say that, you know, anyone listening of whatever background, Be an activist ally. Don't let somebody die in front of you. Don't let someone perish in front of you. Don't let somebody whittle away in front of you. Get in there, for God's sake.
Because I remember when someone said this, you said, how can you not take this personally? But you were speaking to white people when we were on the call. At least that's how I took you in. And until we all take it personally, we're not getting very far. So what I just got from what you said, I asked particularly people in leadership, what's your passion for Jedi work, justice, equity, inclusion? I'm going to start asking, how and why do you take this personally? Why do you need to take this personally? You were so gracious. Well, you were role-playing as someone by hierarchy and also as a person of color, marginalized, how you are helping the white leader say, I want to support you being successful because we all need to be doing it. So that was your strategy. As a white person, I can maybe even be even more direct and say, if you don't take it personally, you actually are going to be left behind if you are not a part of this and you are having people die in front of you. So powerful, Alfred, when you just hear that. Somebody, oh, so powerful.
And I think you want someone waste away. And their soul stolen, you know?
Folks listening, please just keep breathing, because if you're relating to Alfred, very powerful terms, but tell me I'm wrong, Alfred, you're finding particularly folk of color, indigenous folks, putting 200% in, committed, and white folks still saying it's not enough. So if folks are getting some of those signs, you made like 8 or 10, it's one thing to have a microaggression, interrupted, spoken over, not in a meeting. What you did is framed it as, if these are cumulative impact, it could be folks are trying to work you out. I'm not saying to leave, but what advice do you have or systems, or even the white folks, when they notice some of the colleagues of color, they're getting some of this racist impact, and some whites are trying to move these truth tellers, unapologetic change agents out. What systems, advice for white folk, what could they be doing, and folks, advice for the folk of color who are getting moved out and they're experiencing those just devastating impacts?
Well, you know, I had never thought about it until literally this moment. You know, a lot of times we tell people to document everything, right? You know, I never thought of documenting on someone else's behalf. If someone's constantly being the target, on what day and at what time, what was said? You know what? Because at some point, regardless of whether it happens or not, I've been asked to be a witness or a contributor to someone's protest or their firing, you know, where I've had someone call me and say, would you serve in this wrong, as a witness in this wrongful firing? Well, how am I going to remember everything that happened to them? But even more than that, how is this leader or so-called leader in name only impacting the entire team? You know, we talk about belonging and everyone bringing their full self and everyone contributing and then we're all a team and rah, rah, rah. How is this so-called leader or non-leader contributing to the demise of the team? You know, the dysfunction of the team. There's a book on the five dysfunctions of the team. So document yourself. You know, sometimes the person being at that is so, you know, they're so worn down or they're in that moment, they're not capturing everything. So be an ally that way, simply put. You know, that's one thing.
Such a good strategy. What else?
So the other thing is, in one workshop I asked people the following question, and I'm shocked every time. When I ask the question, I get the answer. My question is usually in the last week, not counting this week, up until this day, the week before, or even have you experienced a microaggression? One. Two, have you observed a microaggression and did nothing? Three, have you actually perpetrated a microaggression? And four, did you do something? So I guess it's not, my math is off. Three or four questions there. And also, you can answer one, two, three, or four, or all of the above. And it's amazing that the dial is so tilted to the side of observing, experiencing, actually being a perpetrator. I think people in the room are shocked that the amount of perpetrators in the room. So the point here is, to what degree are you a contributor to this toxic environment, or playing a neutral role, how can you step up?
All that bystander training that folks may have had, applying it to creating greater equity and inclusion, in addition to intervening on sexual harassment, which is often where those trainings are in an organization. We just have a few more minutes. I had a new question as you were talking. As I looked at your resume more closely, I'm finding with the focus on anti-blackness and anti-indigenous off of Mr. George Floyd, the murder of Mr. George Floyd, I wonder if Latinx, Latinas, and organizations, if we have not held also, much less Asian Americans. So I think we have to do them all, and even my colleagues who are talking about anti-blackness agree. And how do we do it all? The questions I have for you either, you know, anywhere you want, but how do you hold all, and are there some specific ways to amplify dynamics that Latinx, Latinos experience that might get missed if we are only focused on anti-blacks? So audience, make sure I'm not doing either or. I'm doing actually, we need to hold it all, and I don't think we have the capacity to yet.
Well, there's a lot there in that question, Kathy. And my mind is spinning different thoughts. I often attempt to frame the universe. So okay, in this universe of issues here, how can we frame it and break it down? One first thought is pain, hurt is hurt. Okay? And one's experience is one's own, and they alone know to what degree they're experiencing or feeling that. One piece. The other is whose time at the moment. What issues are around? What people have occurred that mobilizes all to that hot flash point, to that hot spot. Also, like anything, strength in numbers. So if we're going to accomplish radical change, and let's look at it as radical change. And in some people's radical is another person normal. This is what should be. But things are so in disarray that it will take radical change to get even to a place of, a ground set. The thought I was going to come back to is that I don't know that we do enough about learning. BIPOC folks, I think we need to do more around learning each other's histories and each other's hopes and dreams and tragedies. Manzanar, Japanese internment, the March of Tears, the Walk of Tears, Native Americans, Latinos. I want to get a T-shirt that says, I didn't cross the border crossed me. I grew up in California, Mexico, New Mexico, Texas, Arizona, parts of the country that were, right there. They were on the other side of the border, not all the places I mentioned, but... So what do we know about others' history of oppression and colonization? And as you really look at most marginalized groups, they share that type of a history. Or oppression at a key point in time. Anytime a group has come in numbers, anytime a group is beginning to impact and influence and achieve, the rules are changed or there's a clampdown. It's not about who's up first and who's hitting sixth, in the ninth inning. It's really about collectively what do we know about each other and where do we intersect? Where are we very comparable? Yeah, I was on a Zoom, and I know we're running short on time, and I was hurt. I had an ouch moment where someone, in response, and I'm in the room, so I'm in the room where it happened. Someone said, Latinos can pass. I'm like, what? You don't have it as bad. Literally, they said you don't have it as bad, and you can pass. It's not the same as having come in chains. Again, as I said, that is dramatic and traumatic and specific to the group. Hispanics have been colonized, decimated, and wiped out. Latinos and tribes, indigenous folks. And that's not to talk about any one group or person. That was one person's opinion. But we really need not to get into name blame or whose pain is greater, whose hurt is greater, whose history is more tragic or traumatic, because the impact and the influence to this day is right before our eyes for all BIPOC folks and other marginalized people.
The Depression Olympics, which someone named it that.
Yeah, yeah.
Set up by the systems and the white people. We can divide and conquer folk of color, indigenous folk. We keep the system. I love that way of being. Tell your own story and the story of your peoples and the story of racism, colonization, that impacts your ancestry as well as today. Takes time, but affinity spaces and organizations can do some of that on their own, learning about other groups, and then come together. Can you imagine if organizations did 2 day affinity, and that may not be enough, but affinity, leader development, leader empowerment, I don't know what we call it, invested in folk of color, in these ways, different affinity spaces facilitated. So powerful.
Awareness to action. I can see it now. Awareness to action.
And so much I'm taking away. One was, whose time is it in this moment? So not either or. You get more slice of the pie. It's in this moment, radical change, come together. And in that process, who else do we need to be paying attention? Love it. We probably have a few minutes left. Anything else you want to share? Because you've talked about being an empath and many folk of color just absorbing the emotions and energy of others as they're trying to support themselves, other folk of color, indigenous folk in a very white supremacist toxic system. So we have about 5 minutes left. Save me a few to close out. What are your thoughts for self-care, community care?
So a reset for everyone is we need to change our notion of normal. So for a while, early in the pandemic and civil unrest, people were talking about when can we get back to normal. Well, some people would argue that normal was not very good for me. There is no normal to go back to. And also, there is no new normal or next normal. It's just the future now. So we need to really frame how we think and where we're going to go with that, because there's a nostalgia that should just be put aside, and how real and true is that for all involved. I do suffer from racial fatigue, empathy fatigue at times more than others, for just absorbing, being an empath and being a sponge. If you're caring and sharing, you will absorb. I'm having to really look at self-care. It all comes down to hygiene, mental hygiene, not just physical hygiene, mental hygiene, psychological hygiene. Everything that we are on all of our makeup, our fabric, really just getting the toxins out. If you go away with anything today, anyone listening, identify those toxins, and if it's toxic people, toxic situations, toxic self hurt or harm, and it might look benign on the surface, but really you're hurting yourself at some point. Get out of there. I would leave that with folks. And also, it happened in one of our communication, in one of our groups, Kathy, that you hosted, and I've taken it away ever since that conversation. Conversation is identify what it is that is within your sphere of influence and that you can control. Because there's so many things that are at some point out of our control, and we need to, again, frame the universe. What is within our sphere of influence, and what is it that we can control? I think we can keep a bit healthier that way.
I love it. I am reminded of the Angela Davis quote, I'm going to change the things I didn't do before. I wish people look it up.
Because I come out of 12 steps, so apparently the Serenity, and it's like, yes, and.
Right.
Gotta change more, because I think, all right, a couple minutes, quick, if you don't mind. What do you say when somebody says, I don't have time, I don't deserve self-care healing, and then please let people know how they can find you, and then we got to close. I'm so sorry.
Sure. First of all, we get cut off. DiverseStrategiesNow.com and Facebook. I'm sorry, LinkedIn. LinkedIn and DiverseStrategiesNow.com. If you can't love yourself, how can you love others? And how can you allow others to love you? On a very basic, fundamental level. That's one piece. The other is, who are you modeling for? Do you have children? Do you have dependents? Are you dependent on others? What message are you sending them when you don't care for yourself? And at some point, don't fool yourself. You can't go on that way. You can't neglect yourself continuously for a long period of time, because you will start to break up your health on all levels, your ability to even think in the moment. So please, hey, if you really care about others, care for yourself first or in equal measure, and be here for the long haul. We need all of you. You all came here. You self-selected to be here today or later if you listen to the recording. Be part of the solution for yourself, as well as for the rest of the world, or the corner of the world that you're trying to save.
Thank you so much, Alfred Ramirez, for joining today. So much wisdom. I'm taking away so much. Kathy O'Bear, I will see you all next month. Thank you again, Alfred.
You've been listening to Dr. Kathy O'Bear on Transformation Talk Radio. Thanks for tuning in, and be sure to catch us next time as Kathy inspires listeners to become agents of change, motivate, innovate, and speak truth to power. Step into the courageous you that will change the world. Connect to life-changing conversations to extend your reach. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyobear.com. That's drkathyobear.com.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program, and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
And good Wednesday to you. Benny Mathers here for a look at your Alternative Talk AM 1150 traffic update for around this hour. Traffic's not looking too bad at the moment. We still have a little bit of slowing on 405 northbound out of those esters as you're approaching through the Kennedale Hill. But everywhere else, traffic's actually looking pretty good. Enjoy your Wednesday. Stay tuned. Coming up next, after the news weather, it's actually another hour of the Transformation Talk Radio Network. Dr. Pat Show, talk radio to thrive by.
NBC News Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. There may just be two injuries in a North Texas high school shooting. Mansfield ISD says one Timberview High School student and a staff member needed treatment after shots rang out in the classroom this morning. Arlington police had previously said there were four total injuries. Law enforcement is looking for Timothy Simpkins in connection with the shooting. It's believed he got into a fight with someone in the classroom before pulling a gun. Police have surrounded a home in Arlington, Texas as they hunt for the suspected school shooter, but don't know if Simpkins is inside. Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz is offering prayers for students, teachers, and first responders and parents in Arlington after another mass shooting.
There have been far too many of these at far too many schools.
The shooting suspect is a student at the high school. Another big test vote on extending the debt limit is set for today in the Senate. 60 votes are needed to move it forward under Senate filibuster rules, and Republicans are not expected to offer yes votes. Republicans argue Democrats control the Senate and can raise the debt limit on their own through other procedural maneuvers. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy says Americans should be concerned with not only the cost of the social spending bill, but also the language in it. The California Republicans said Democrats want to know how much money is in your bank account and what you're doing with it.
You should be worried about the cost, but you also should be concerned about the content, because this is in the bill. That if you have $600 in your bank account, the government wants to know what you're doing. They're directing the banks, the credit unions, the fintechs to tell you. They want to follow what's happening in your life.
McCarthy said the package Democrats are pushing isn't something the U.S. can afford, regardless if the number is lower than $3.5 trillion. Google is launching a new feature to help out eco-friendly travelers. The tech giant announced today it will display a carbon emissions estimate in its search results for nearly every flight, next to the price and duration of it. The Boston Red Sox are moving on to the ALDS. The Red Sox dispatched the New York Yankees 6-2 in the AL wildcard game last night. Today, the Los Angeles Dodgers host the St. Louis Cardinals in the NL wildcard game. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
This view was worth a hike.
Right? And it's a good way to stay on top of my health.
Yes. I'm Cologuard, a prescription colon cancer screening option for people 45 plus at average risk. Have you screened for colon cancer?
Not yet.
Don't wait. It's more treatable when caught in early stages.
Tell me more.
Cologuard is non-invasive and it's used at home. It detects altered DNA in your stool to find 92% of colon cancers.
92%?
Yep, even those in early stages.
This was seen in a clinical study with patients 50 and older. Any positive results should be followed by a diagnostic colonoscopy. False positive and negative results may occur. Cologuard is not a replacement for colonoscopy in high-risk patients. Do not use if you have had adenomas, have inflammatory bowel disease and certain hereditary syndromes, or a personal or family history of colon cancer.
Most insured patients pay $0. Ask your provider or an online prescriber if Cologuard is right for you, or visit Cologuard.com.
I'm in.
Let's go ahead and take a look now to Alternative Talk weather outlook for Wednesday. Well, we'll see mostly cloudy skies and a chance of rain pretty much on and off throughout the day today. A few thunderstorms mixed in as well later on this evening. High temperatures around 58, 59 degrees. Tonight, the clouds and rain will move out. Partly cloudy skies through the overnight. Low temperatures down to about 46. For Thursday, the sunshine returns. High temperatures around 57, 58. Partly cloudy skies for Thursday night. Lows down to about 44. For Friday and running up in the weekend, though, clouds and a chance of light rain showers expected. High temperatures in the upper 50s.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Basile and Transformation Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned, because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail.
Hey, everybody, welcome. Welcome to our good news segment. Okay, two things I want to say. One of the things is that, you know, if you are like me, you've navigated through some very interesting waters here in the past 20, 24 months. But one of the things that I've really been able to depend on is the people at my bank, my bank representative, and especially the folks I work with at Bank of America. But one of the things important to me is what they are doing to bring a new level of education for all of us. You know, what is it that all of us need to know? Ashley Ross joining us here today, client care executive at Bank of America. But the question is this: how has the pandemic redefined customer experience? How has that happened? And if it has happened, then what can we learn today from Ashley? Ashley, it's great to have you. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. It is great to be here, and thank you for the introduction and for being our customer. We appreciate it. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Customer expectations have changed as a result of the pandemic, which really emphasizes why it's so important for companies to listen to their customers on an ongoing basis so that we understand how customer expectations are changing and how we can adapt quickly to that. One of the things that is more important now than ever, and this is not just for banking, but across all industries, is it's even more important to deliver easy solutions digitally and also have that personal touch with customers. Customers really want and expect both of those things.
And
so
you know,
as you mentioned for Bank of America.
Yeah. One of the things that I was excited to talk to you about is just this. How do I say it? Maybe you can help me. It's not business as usual, except for the fact that one of the things we learned in 20 years, pretty much, is that the customer, one, is so in tune with the pulse of what they really want, and two, they're really eager to tell us, aren't they?
Yes, that's a very good observation. It's so true. Every customer expects to be treated as an individual and feel like they have a personal relationship with the business. And that includes, to your point, giving us feedback, telling us feedback about their experiences. We have a program where we send surveys out to clients to ask them about their experience. And exactly to your point, they want to tell us. We've had 50 million responses since that program launched. So they expect to have a dialogue with us and provide us their feedback. And they expect us to speak to them specifically. And so this concept of personalization is more important than ever. The companies don't talk to their customers like other customers, but they talk to their customers as individuals, specifically with solutions to them.
I am so glad you brought that up because, you know, one of the things that I love about having this conversation with you is if there's one thing we've learned in the past 24 months is that the landscape and the language around the people we work with has to really shift to exactly what you said. Yes, of course, they are customers. Yes, of course, they are clients. But they are people with needs, desires, inspiration. You know, they are folks that have a vision. And that vision doesn't have to be gigunda. It could be a vision for their lives and their families. And what you're talking about, I'm just blown away by the number of people that participated. And can we talk a little bit, what are they saying?
Yes, absolutely. So to your point, the pandemic has brought so much uncertainty. And now more than ever, our focus is on improving the financial health of our customers and our communities. And through the pandemic, we're even, you know, more committed to helping customers manage through their financial needs through this time of uncertainty, but also achieve their individual goals throughout their lifetime.
Yeah.
And so to your point, every customer is unique and they have their own dreams. They have their own plans. And one of the features that we have at Bank of America to help with that is Life Plan, where customers can track their short-term and long-term financial goals over time. And it's one of our company's most rapidly adopted feature. About 5 million clients have engaged in it. So back to your point, it's not, banking is not just about helping these clients do transactions easily and digitally, but really about their whole financial needs, financial lives, and their life plan for their finances.
You know, I'll tell you one thing for me, and maybe you can talk to this because you really are on the pulse. First of all, let me thank you for taking the time and really putting the resources available to do a survey at this level. Being a researcher myself, I know what is involved in this. I know the importance of research and data integrity. And, you know, part of this now for you to even be out here talking about it is to help us understand what it means when we say, I need to personalize experiences. We need to look at strategies differently. I don't know if this is something that you can talk about, but I know I've learned a ton and I've redirected my technology. I mean, what have we learned from your perspective in the past 22, 24 months? What have we learned?
Yeah. Customers, as I mentioned, expect both the digital solutions and the personal touch. And when we have all this information from our customers, whether it's surveys that you just mentioned, or even knowing how they transact with us, we have to use that to make their lives better and simpler and easy with solutions that are personalized to them. So I mentioned Life Plan, but let me bring a different example to really put a point on that. So Personalization. I used to get emails from my favorite pizza shop a couple years ago that would give me a discount on a large pie and 2 liters. And that was an email for people like me, right? Yeah. Customers like me. But now it's to the whole new level where they email me at the same exact time each week I usually order with the pre-filled option to reorder what I always get from my family. I double-click to pay, and it literally takes no more than 10 seconds. Mm. So I think what we've learned is customer expectations have changed. I'm not expecting a 10% off coupon. I'm expecting something directly to me about my previous purchases and my behavior, that something that's going to make it easier for me. So that's what all companies need to really take into account, is the game has changed.
The game has changed. You know, I know these are short interviews, and first of all, let me thank you and appreciate, you know, you coming on here and really enlighten us, because the other thing you're also sharing with us is you're sharing, you know, what action you all are taking. And, you know, part of this is really talking about how companies have provided solutions. But I want to, in the 2 minutes or so that we have left, is one, how do we find out more? That's also very important. But you touch upon something that is really important to me. I studied it for 10 years. I studied a trust in organizational and keeping promises. And I want to ask you, how has trust prevailed in your data so far?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the ways that we think it's important to build trust with our customers is to communicate, to over-communicate. Communication with clients is so invaluable, and it was for us throughout the pandemic. And sometimes people are hesitant to over-communicate because they don't want to bother the clients. But in reality, clients appreciate knowing you always have their back, and it gains their trust. So that's the first thing. I think the other thing is acknowledge the relationship and say thank you. Acknowledge their loyalty, acknowledge that they've chosen you as a company to serve them, and say thank you. So we're, for National Customer Service Week, we're saying thank you to all our clients simply for being our client. And then to your last question about how to learn more, bankofamerica.com is the place where all the information is. You can search up what you're looking for there, bankofamerica.com.
You know, thank you so much. I know that our listeners, our audience, are fully aware of what it takes for you all to come out here and do these interviews to educate us, to make sure that you're providing us with information, and that you are also making sure you stay on the pulse of what people are looking for. Because first and foremost, I don't know how many times I've said this, but I think Pink Floyd said it best. You know, when we're talking about money and our personal finances, it doesn't get more important than that. And to do these educational programs and to do the surveys that you're doing and to bring this information, it is filling in an enormous gap for people. And I wanted you to know that. We've had our listeners comment on things that you all have done before. Thank you for staying on the pulse of what's going on and the changes and transition. I can't wait till you do the next survey.
Thank you so much for that. That's great feedback to hear, and it's been my pleasure to be here today.
All right, thank you. We're going to take a short break, everybody. We'll be right back.
Life can be demanding, and you may feel like you're constantly on the go, but sometimes our wheels are spinning and we're too focused on making them turn to notice we're stuck in the mud. Tune into The Pause with me, Ellen Wyoming Deloy, every second and fourth Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio. Learn how to stop, reflect, and start moving forward with intention. And if you're really looking to jumpstart your personal development, schedule a free consultation with me at ellenwyomingdeloy.com.
TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome. Welcome to our fabulous, fabulous author's corner today. Let me just tell you, before I introduce my special guest today, here's the question that I want to ask everybody. What does it mean to live a truly substantial life? One of the things I like to ask is, what does it mean to live a truly abundant and grateful life. And what does that mean when I ask that question? Can you look back at your life? Can you look at all the things you've been through? Can you look back and say, wow, I did an outstanding job of this? Or what is it you would say to yourself? What would you think as you're sitting there and thinking back over those days? Did you think about the challenges you've overcome? Did you think about the people you've loved? Did you think about how you step up into the world? Are you ready to tell the story of your life? My guest today, more than ready to tell the story of his life. He writes story, summer classics. Wow. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Now, I got to tell you, it's really interesting because we had a debate over how to pronounce your name or what to say with your name. You know, my stepmom comes from the Deep South. And so...
You sent it to her?
And so,
how do you say that?
Yeah, so she says, why don't you just call him Bo? I said, no, Mama, that's not the way we're going to do it. But that, look, whether we call ourselves by this name or that, it's the sum of how we lived that could tell the story.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I got a wake-up call on that one.
Well, and, you know, I want to talk with you about that because, you know, you and I are not far apart. You know, having grown up with a stepmama from the Deep South, as I like to say, you know, there's some lessons that I've gotten in life. But for you to come forward and tell this story now and to write this book now and to collaborate to write this book now, the power of your story, I can't even express how timely this is. What has been your heart's inspiration to come forth now?
Well, when I was in the hospital, one of the reasons I wrote this story was because I don't think people realize you're going to get a signal that you're going to die, and it's like 100% accurate. It's just like you get it, and it's like, okay, you got a few minutes to say whatever you're going to say, so say it because we're out of here. Eternity greets you. Mm. And so I was fortunate that I came back from that, and then I got a signal in my brain, and I would say it came from God. You can, you know, put wherever it came from, but it was like, write the book. And I'd already started working on this, but and after I wrote 13 chapters, I found out I wasn't a very good writer, so maybe I need to get somebody else to do it. That was what inspired me, and so I'm hopeful that people will be touched by it. That's the intention anyway. And obviously from the reviews I've seen, which I didn't write for reviews, I'm surprised by her reviews, frankly, but I loved it, you know, the story because it's about me. But it sounds egotistical, sorry about that.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, great reviews. God has got his hand in this as well, or mm-hmm. somebody does.
Mm-hmm.
It's not me.
But, you know, yeah, I totally agree with you because I don't think I'm sitting here because I'm all that. I think I'm sitting here because, you know, you and I have this in common. You know, we've been touched by God, whatever one calls it, universe, people listening to this show, fill in your own blank on this. But there's a point by which we get touched and we ask ourselves the question, wow, what a life. Do I have it all? And I want to ask you this question because as I'm reading the book and I'm going through this, and, you know, I saw so much of my own life like flash in front of me until the moment I looked in the mirror and I didn't recognize myself. How did that happen for you?
Well, yeah, I'm kind of a clothes horse. So when I came home, I looked at my closet and went, well, that was stupid. I don't know. That's just weird. That's a weird thing to say, I guess, mm-hmm. or think. But it's like, okay, well, that doesn't matter in the scheme of things. Mm-hmm. The clothes are, you know, they say the clothes makes a man. If you read the George Washington book, he spent a lot of time and effort on this clothing to make him look a certain way. It certainly worked, but I don't know. It's just that was just something that happened. But then this, you know, this signal that you need to write the book, and I'm going to try and keep working on it. I'm like, I can't do this. Wow. I'm going to have to get somebody to help me.
Yeah.
8 years to get it done, so it's tough.
It is tough. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I've been asked by a number of publishers to sit down and write my book, and I'm kind of like where you are. You know, I'm great to be able to ask you questions and talk about this, but, you know, part of this is part of the journey. I want to ask you this question. Let's talk about your life for a minute. You know, Mama used to say it's a long and winding road, and she would say that even before the Beatles came out with that song. But she would say it's a long and winding road, you know, don't run yourself off a cliff. I don't think anybody wrote that part down. You know, it took me a while to grow up and really get to the point where, oh my goodness, I am getting ready to run off the cliff. How many moments have you had in your life like that?
Well, certainly there's a, I say I have an MBA in mistakes, and certainly as you read through this, well, I'm working on my PhD now, but I've, you know, did you get to the 2008 recession, and that was like off the cliff. I'm like, I just didn't know what was going to happen. I said, I didn't need amphetamines to stay awake. I could not sleep.
Yeah.
I didn't need any help staying awake. I did need help sleeping, but I couldn't get that either. So I was just like, I don't know what to do. Tell me what to do. I've got to get an answer. I'm keep working on it. I got through it. I mean, I think that, you know, you get these trials and there's a reason for them, I think. And, you know, it makes you a different, better person.
Yeah, I don't know. You would.
Like, I went through it. You hate going through it.
Oh, my gosh. Well, look, it. I don't know that you and I would be here if we didn't go through it. And, you know, let me ask you a question around that. You know, what I mean by that, as I'm reading through your book, it's really clear to me that, you know, at some point in time, you know, you think you've got it made. You think you have it all. You think everything that, you know, they said you needed to have, you have. And then one day, 2008, I say seven because, you know, our listeners started talking about it then. They were losing their jobs left and right. And, you know, you get to that moment, it's a pivotal moment, and some people drop to their knees, other people rise up, other people don't get off the couch. And, you know, what got you up? What was that thing or things where you just got struck by this beautiful light to say, I've got to step up, I've got to get up, I've got to move beyond this? I've got to. You can fill in the blanks for us if you don't mind.
Well, my son describes it as grit.
That's it, boy.
He says, you've got grit. You know, you're willing to push through extremely difficult situations, get to the other side. We have a motto in the company, whatever it takes, and it's sort of that.
Yeah.
You know, never give up, or the, you know, sort of the mantra of Winston Churchill, never, 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 ever give up. And that's kind of, you know, you just keep working through it till you get, you don't necessarily get the result you want, but you get a result and you move on. And then that's what you're right. I thought I was at the top of the world, and then I realized, no, I'm going to lose everything. I'm going to lose it all right here. It's like, it's almost like you're gambling, but you're gambling on yourself, I guess, which I always felt better about gambling on myself. And I've gotten to where I might put a quarter in a slot machine.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm bleeding.
Two confessions. I do have to buy a lottery ticket from now and again. I get ready to go do that today. As I take a look at this, I'm reading through the book. There are so many things that we could talk about, and I know this is a really short interview. And before we get too far, Roland, first of all, tell folks, one, how they find out about you. Let's give them your website. And then how do they get a copy of the book? Let's start there, if we could.
Right. If you want to find, this is not intentional, but if you Google Bew White, because it's a weird name.
Yeah.
My middle name, actually, is William Bew White III. But so I went by Bew after I moved to New York in 1972. And then if you just Google Bew White, there's crazy amounts of information. It's like, Oh my gosh, I had to buy BeautyWhite.com. I'm not publisher or something. Got to buy BeautyWhite.com.
Yep.
Somebody had it. I was like, oh my God.
I know.
I buy my own website.
You do. I have to buy mine now. You know, mine has not been available. My name thing has not been available, and finally it's available, and I just had to put a bid on it. I'm like, okay, God, I got it. I can do that. Yep. And then they can get the book from here, too. And I just want to make sure everybody, when we say BeW, it's BEW,
right? Right.
So go ahead and Google it, and you'll get there.
Like, if you can say few, you can say new.
You can, exactly. Look, this, we're talking about a story, a summer classic, but it's a story that touches the heart of so many. If I could just mention this to you, as I'm reading through it, there's so many impactful things, but one of the things that happened in my life and happened in your life too, one of the things I never thought I'd lose or be at risk for losing was my health. Now, what about you?
Well, I went to China 29 times, so I developed, and I didn't know I had a blood clotting issue, and I was taking aspirin, and aspirin thins your blood.
Yeah.
That doesn't help. You need an anticoagulant, so I found that out the hard way, so that your blood doesn't clot. Even though it's thin, they can still clot.
Right.
Anticoagulant. And they have all these cool ones now, but... I was like, when I got in the hospital and found out I had blood clots in my lungs, I was like, that's impossible. I'm taking too much aspirin. So I'm like, nah, that's not what you need to be taking. And I was like, okay, wow.
Yeah.
So the story itself is really, it's a wonderful life. It's a new version of It's a Wonderful Life to me. I mean, when I finished, I went, man, this is so similar to something. I just realized that's what it was. As I was watching it one Christmas, I'm thinking, man, other than I didn't try to kill myself, but it's very similar where Royal Bank of Scotland is Potter, and then you have my wife, Donna Reed is not my wife, but pretty close. I'm not Jimmy Stewart either, but everything kind of lines up that way. It's just so, it's kind of amazing.
But, this is a question I want to ask you. This is what I love about having these conversations. Certainly Kelly Clarkson wrote a song, If It Don't Kill You, Make You Stronger. But I grew up with that motto. I mean, I grew up, look, my mom had her first child at 12 and her second one at 13. So this is really, the story of a woman from the deep south. Yeah, well, right? This is one of those stories you hear about. It is possible. Trust me. Just look at my two sisters. But there's this thing that comes with both inspiration and perspiration, that thing that helps us rise up.
Mm-hmm.
In today's world, after writing this book had to change you. Writing this book or doing this book had to change you. And I'm curious to know if you emerged differently after seeing this book come to light.
Yeah, my friends, it's interesting you said that, because a couple of my friends said, well, you're not really different. I was like, well, I don't think it's not an overnight, it's not like you blink your eyes and you're a different person. But I just do think my heart was changed to some degree. The person to ask probably is my wife, because she has to live with me every day, but I think she sees it.
Get her on a call. Let's go.
He said,
let's have that
company more than me. I was like, you still believe that? I call her the cute one. I have a lot of nicknames for him, but that's the one I've been using lately. And so, I don't know if it's your kids, it's everything. So I'm expecting us to ask them. I'm going to say they say I've gotten a lot more mellow, is probably what they would say, but it's introspective, I guess, probably is the right word.
Has your view of success changed?
Yes, my. Say that again.
Has your view of success changed? I know for me, when I got, I was healthy all my life. And 6 months after buying my first hour of airtime, like 18 years ago, I started to doubt myself. and I got sicker than you can imagine. And so, you know, my question really is that my view of a lot of things in life changed. But I'm curious about success because, you know, when I sit and I'm speaking with you, what our listeners may not know is, you know, how successful you really are. And I just wonder if your view of that word or what it means, has that changed for you?
Yeah, I think most people think of success as something monetary, but it's probably more spiritual than that, more, you know, family has a lot to do with it, you know, putting God first. There's a lot of ways to describe it, but it's, you know, money. Well, this is a great one. Got this from my great-grandfather. He said, money's not the most important thing in life, but it's second to whatever is first. Well, that's a good one. It's like, you know, who was it said, you know, I've been rich and I've been poor. Rich is better.
You know,
I haven't been poor, per se, so I can't really, if you read the commentary in the beginning of the book, it does say I was born from aristocracy, and what I really try to do is start over a business that, and from scratch, a business that my great-grandfather started back in the 1800s, where a whole bunch of family members basically took the dividends and nobody started anything over again. I said, well, I don't want to start this over again because I've benefited. I mean, I benefited to the tune of $125,000 in stock. I mean, that's to a lot of people, that's a lot, you know. But and now, in the beginning of the book, I lost a quarter of it the first 5 years. So I was like, well, I'm bet on myself and buying a company. But I think you learn through the years that, you know, you need money to get along, but it's not the most important thing in your life. So I kind of go from event to event. I have to have something in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
The book was something I put in front of me. I've got to do this.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like I've got to get it done. And then I got it done. And now I'm doing all these interviews. I'm more like, okay. Hopefully that'll change some life.
Hopefully it is. And, you know, I'll take it from me. I mean, I'm a girl from the Bronx, New York, and I did grow up in projects. I was homeless at 17, and I'll tell you, when I read your book, I know that it is a book for people that are on the verge of giving up. I know that, you know, it doesn't matter where you come from or what you've been born into. You know, when I sit down, I read your story, and I read your lessons, and I read what some of the messages are, and there are multiple messages in the book for me. But to come forth and bring a book like this is divinely guided to me. It is a book for the time we live in. It is a story that hopefully will inspire people. And you know what I love about it? You're doing all these interviews, and maybe you know what's next, but maybe you don't. I wonder, have you ever known what was next?
Yeah. My favorite quote is, you get the future you plan for. So I didn't know that I was going to do interviews. I did the book, and then all of a sudden, you know, I hired a publisher, and then here we go.
Yeah.
But you got to do this, and can you make speeches? And yeah, I can do all that. Yeah, sure, I'll do it. I'm a huge planner, so I plan ahead everything, and then sometimes it doesn't work out.
Yeah.
You got to fix that or, you know, go back and go, okay, I screwed that up, and let me see if I can fix it. I lived in Tudor City. You know where that is? In New York City, right across from the Inn building.
Yeah, I was born in...
Kind of nice now, I think, isn't it?
I was born in the Bronx.
Okay.
So, a whole place changed. I mean, honestly, I every time I go back east, I'm like, oh, let's go look. And I'm like, wait a minute, I graduated PS14. Like, where is that? What is that building that came up over there? What the heck is that? But, you know, here's the thing, and I don't want to keep you. I know you're doing a bunch of these interviews. I love what you said. Now, my stepmama used to have, I mean, I'm telling you, there was more things come out of her mouth than you can even imagine. But it took me a bunch of years for them to sink in. And I love what you said. She kind of said almost the same thing that you said and kind of you learned. And I think we probably had the same kind of grandfather. But what she would say is, you got to plan for option A and prepare for option B. I'll tell you what, none of us knew what that was like until option A didn't work out a couple times in our lives, and we thought, oh, do I have an option B? I want to ask you this question. As you move forward and you're speaking and you're doing these interviews, what is the personal message you want to share with people today? What is that message that you'd like folks to hear right now from you about their beautifully lived lives?
Well, one thing that probably made a huge difference in my life is my wife. You know, I kind of go through this. It's just quick and easy.
Yes.
Great wife, great life. Amazing wife, amazing life. You know, so if you get your spouse right, it helps a lot. I mean, she supported me, you know, when I didn't support myself. I was kind of going, I can't do this anymore. This is crazy. Why am I doing this? I need to go get a job. And she would go, you can do it. I believe in you. Just keep going. I was like, okay, somebody believes in me. Having people around you that believe in you is critical, I'd say. That's one thing.
Yeah.
And then staying on the right path, which, you know, for me is probably different than others. But, you know, prayer has been really helpful for me.
Oh, boy.
During difficult times. And so that's critical, you know, support. It doesn't have to be, it may not get married, so it could just be your mother or your sister or brother or whatever it is, or a friend. Just somebody you feel, you know, really, really believes in you.
Boy.
And believe in yourself. You got to believe in yourself. You got to, some people call that ego. I don't know that it's that, because when we do.
I call it confidence.
Yeah, confidence.
Confidence.
We do interviews, and we have people take a test beforehand. It's real simple. It's 8 minutes. But one of the things we actually look for is that confidence. A lot of people in the company call it ego, and it may come off that way sometimes, but they believe in themselves, and so you don't want somebody in a management role that doesn't believe in themselves, because they're not going to pull people with them, along with them. And I describe an entrepreneur, the six characteristics of an entrepreneur, mm-hmm. which are really critical. And if you don't have all of these, you can't do it. I got this from somebody else, but I was like, wow, that is so smart.
Yeah, but you tell it beautifully, though.
Visionary, passionate, driven, risk taker. That's a big one. I've really got that one. Problem solver and responsible. So those are the characteristics you need to be an entrepreneur. And please don't try if you don't have those. Or maybe you have a partner that has half and you have half, and y'all, you know, divide them up. I don't think the risk taker guy would get along with somebody that hates risk, if that's your partner. So, but it might help you a little bit take less risk. Anyway, those are the kind of things that guide me, and I think help other people.
And I love them, because I love that, you know, it's important for people to understand, you know, exactly what you said, that there are these things that we can follow. And I agree with you completely. Doubt, period, doubt. Whether it's doubt in your own life or doubt in your higher power or doubt, it is more toxic and insidious than fear at some level. And it is the thing, believe me, I know this. I mean, for 4 years after I graduated, I never talked about my degree at all. I wouldn't talk about it. I mean, I just dreamt every night that I would wake up and there would be somebody snatching it out of my hands, because it was so unlikely for me to be that person, and I had to grow into it. And once you grow into it, there's a level of confidence and humility that I really gathered from you and from the book. There's both. You know, ego is the absence. Yeah. You know, ego.
There's
a lot in there. But, you know, you're right about this. See, ego is the absence of humility.
Yeah.
And if you can stand in confidence and, you know, the centeredness you have and everything you've described in the book, this is a message for a time. And I want to thank you. I want to thank you so much for doing the book. I want to thank you for joining me. One last question. I'd love to know your personal message, but also tell people how to get the book and tell them how to find out about you, because I think you got a picture of your wife on your website, too.
Yeah, white.com, and then Summer Classics. The name of the company, we didn't really talk much about my company. Summer Classics and Gabby Home and Winston are the three companies inside Gabriella White.
It's beautiful furniture. I just love it.
I had my roommate in college, who's an actor, producer, director, read it, and it just came out on Audible. So you can get it on, you can get it at BeWhite.com, you can get it at any one of the Summer Classics home stores, and you can get it at Amazon, obviously, and either Kindle it or, you know, read it, read the book itself. Or mm-hmm. the Audible's kind of cool because he's crying. I called him later and said, hey, you're crying during some of that. Like, were you really crying?
Yeah.
He's just a good actor. And he's like, no, I don't know. Tell me where it was. I was like, well, okay. Yeah, from, maybe you were acting. I don't know, but did a good job on it.
Yeah. And, you know, you can't really act that kind of emotion. You really can't.
Yeah.
You just can't. You know, thank you so much for coming out here and doing a longer interview with me. And there's much more to talk about. Also, when they go to take a look at your website, they're going to see more about your company. They're going to see more about you. They're going to see more about the beauty that you all are creating. Just absolutely beautiful, beautiful, beautiful furniture, beautiful. Thank you so much for everything.
Okay.
All right, everybody, let's take a short break. We'll be right back. Back in that jazz music, aren't we? I don't know. What happened to the rap music, Benny?
Oh, my God.
There you go.
Thank you, Daddy.
I like it.
You're welcome. I'm going to leave that in my car.
Boy, I got to have me some fake something now. I'm telling you.
TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Dr. Sharon Martin with a meditation brought to you from Maximum Medicine Radio. This is a short meditation I designed to improve your connection to the plant world, specifically with regard to plants as food. Please do not do this meditation while driving. The meditation is available anytime through my website. So let's begin. Find a comfortable place where you can allow yourself to deepen inwardly. Let's start by taking a few nice, deep, relaxed breaths. In with your nose, out with your mouth, letting your shoulders drop and your belly soften. We are entering a sacred healing space. And now I open sacred space, calling to all the directions, to the allies, to the guides, all those with the highest good, come join us. Now gently bring your awareness to the space between your eyebrows, seeing from behind your eyes. Again, continue with the deep, easy breathing. In with your nose, out with your mouth. Allow yourself to relax, releasing any tension and taking yourself deeper into this sacred healing space. And now set your intention to connect on a deep level with the plant world and continue to breathe deeply and without tension. And now let your awareness fall from behind your eyes, dropping down into your chest, down to the backside of the heart, and find the entrance to the small, sacred space of the heart. Allow your inner knowing to direct you there. You energetically have been there many times. Make your way into this sacred chamber and take a seat. Look around this familiar room. you're happy to be back in this special place. Find your favorite seat. Comfortably sit and prepare yourself for a sacred journey. Let your body soften as you are guided, following my instructions. Continue to breathe. In with your nose, out with your mouth, holding no tension. You know that you will learn important messages today. You look forward to the wisdom that you will gain. So let's now leave the chamber, walking in sacred energy. Take yourself out to a favorite place in nature. This may be a meadow, a mountaintop, perhaps the seashore, perhaps at the base of a tree. Take time to see this magnificent sight. You are completely relaxed as you settle into this gorgeous place of nature. Look around and see this beautiful spot as you settle in comfortably. Sense all the nature spirits around you. You are completely safe. Notice the colors, the sounds, the smells. You feel yourself surrounded by all the nature spirits, and you begin to open to the dialogue. When you are ready, ask to connect to one of the plant divas that has an important message for you. Ask to connect to one specific diva at this time, knowing that it comes to bring you information, perhaps about the plant it directly represents, or perhaps as a communicator for another single plant or group of plants, or from the nature spirit. Ask to connect. If you get any hesitation, ask, is this conversation possible today? If you get a strong answer that today is not the time, do not despair. You may return as often as you'd like. So just for the remainder, sit peacefully in your nature spot. Perhaps you sense hesitation or resistance as opposed to a clear no. Then you may ask, is there anything I may do to allow this dialogue to unfold? You may be guided to a simple fix, perhaps offering a guarantee that you will take the information to heart, or that you come in mutual respect. Take a moment to ask if you may proceed, or if there's something you need to do to allow this process to go forward. Plant diva approach. Note its shape and color. Perhaps it's just a color, perhaps a feeling. Perhaps it presents in specific form. Maybe it comes as the embodiment of a specific plant or category of plants. Take notice of this. Sense its energy and invite it to come to join you in a special place of nature. Start a conversation with this diva. Ask, what plant energy is needed in my life at this time? What healing power can the plant world bring to me? Is there a specific plant I need to be more connected with? Does this mean as food or nutrition? Take a minute to get those answers. Increased understanding of the value of relationship with the plant world. Ask for help from the plant's allies for your improved wellness. And take some time now to continue your dialogue with the diva, getting whatever messages you need at this time from the plant world. Get ready to take your leave from the diva. As always, in right balance, offer gratitude for the help that it has brought you, knowing that you can reconnect at any time. You may come another time and another plant diva will present itself and the messages are likely to be different. But know that you can come anytime with dialogue with the plant world and you can develop beautiful allies and friendships with these spirits. So with the messages you got today, take a minute to deeply breathe. Take in the messages that you received and take time right now to integrate them into your field. Gently say goodbye and with a heart full of gratitude and appreciation, take your leave from this spot in nature and gently walk back from this nature place into the sacred space of your heart. Take a moment for re-entry, settling on your favorite cushion or place to sit and breathe. Now gently bring your awareness back to this time and this place. We close sacred space as we release the ambassadors of the plant world and thank the directions, the allies, the guides, as always, with deep gratitude for their presence and assistance. Be gentle as you re-enter your day and restart your task. You are magnificent beings of light. Be well.